Hey, hey, it's your girl KV
and Celine,
and we are back with another episode of the Hood Health Report. We're in the house. So today we are talking about food waste, and I was moved to do this episode because I was seeing on social media where when like a Starbucks or something had closed and they had just threw everything out in trash bags and put it out on the street. And this girl had went through it and she was like, this is a bag full of cups. This is like full bags of coffee beans. And she found like all of the sandwiches and everything. And everything was still cold. Like they had just thrown it out. And I'm like, okay, this is crazy that they wouldn't donate this stuff to a shelter or just take it to another Starbucks, like anything. And I noticed that a lot of restaurants and things, they do that at the end of the night. Like a lot of the Panera breads and stuff like that, they will just throw away whatever was made that day. Like you can't even take it home or buy it at a discount. Because I know when I was at Popeyes, they would like give us a little discount. If it was some chicken left at the end of the night, they'd be like, I mean, you know, 50% off, y'all go ahead, get this chicken so we're not just throwing stuff away. But a lot of places just literally throw it away. So that was kind of crazy to me. I feel like some type of legislation needs to be passed to, you know, cut back on food waste, because as many starving people as it is in the world, as many shelters and schools that need food, like we shouldn't just be freely throwing stuff away.
Yeah, and to like piggyback off what you said, I also have experiences with this because I also started off working in fast food. Our manager used to let us take it home every day. So when I was in college, I literally would take home bags of food every day just to have. I would take home food for my friends and stuff like that. But if we didn't take it home, they did throw it out. There was no way. And it was lots of food. Like I worked for a barbecue place. They would just throw everything. Oh yeah, they would throw everything out. Then if you didn't take it, it went to waste. And then after that, I worked for a grocery store or in like a grocery store, and the same thing. So like when they go through and mark food off and people don't buy it by a certain date, we just throw it all out. They wouldn't let us take it home, but you know, I think part of it is just more so they don't want any like risk associated with it. But most of the food wasn't bad. Like that's sometimes the if the box is damaged, they do the same thing. So like if boxes are damaged, they won't sell the items. It was kind of like, dang, people could really eat this.
And that was another thing that we get into in these articles is the grocery stores want the food to be aesthetically pleasing. So if there's a bruise on the tomato or something like they'll throw it out. And I'm just like, you know,
let somebody have that bruised tomato.
That bruised tomato still provides some nourishment. Right. So, yeah, so we can go ahead and get into our articles for the day.
Oh, who said that?
So the first article is called Food Waste, the FAQs or facts about the food waste. It says in the United States, food waste is estimated to be about 30 to 40% of the food supply. This was in 2010. That's approximately 133 billion pounds and 161 billion worth of food. There are a large amount of money being spent on land, water, labor, energy, and outputs for producing, processing, transporting, preparing, storing, and disposing of discarded food. So it's not only when we waste food do we have problems with, you know, the food just being wasted. It's a lot of other things that go into it, like the transportation part about it. We talked about that, like, kind of in season one the first season that I was on, when we talked about how people have to transport food, so that's lots of money with the gas and the economy. It kind of all stimulates back to, like, you know, what we could do to better, you know, what's the word that I'm looking for? Better stimulate the economy or like make it more sustainable. Make it more sustainable. That's the word I'm looking for. So basically another thing that they talked about in that article was the types of spoilage and then also how it affects the production and the supply chain as well. And also in that first article, the question that came up repeatedly was, does the U.S. have a goal to reduce food loss or waste? And they do. They have basically two main ways that they try to do this, and that's through the EPA and the USDA. The EPA estimated in 2010 that the baseline for waste was about 218 pounds of food waste per person that's sent to a disposal. And for 2030, which is, we're in 2004 now, 6 years away, reduction goal aims to reduce waste going into landfills by 50%. So they want everybody to be at about 109 pounds per person. And then the USDA estimates the amount of food loss and waste from the food supply in retail and consumer levels from 2010 to be at about 31% of the food supply, equaling about 133 billion pounds and almost $162 billion.
Another fact from this article was they said 31% of food waste is at retail and consumer level.
Yeah.
So that also includes, like, when you're going through your fridge and something has expired, all of the expired condiments that we may have, and I know we are very guilty of that in my house, like, we'll have something and then we'll use it for a little bit and then it might be 2 or 3 months before we use it again. Yep. And then we're looking at it like, oh, this is expired. And he'll get ready to throw it away. My husband will get ready to throw it away. And I'm like, wait, how far is it expired? Because, you know, these expiration dates aren't, you know, exact. And
yeah,
most of the time it's not to use it by this date. It's that it's the best quality before
date.
This date. So, you know, you can kind of hang on to things a little bit longer. You don't have to immediately toss them out once you see the date on the containers.
Mm-hmm.
So some ways to reduce food loss is improving product development, storage, ordering / shopping, marketing, labeling, and cooking methods. So basically, you know, as far as restaurants and things like that, I know people always talk about how Cheesecake Factory has that huge menu that's like a book, but then half the time they don't even have half of the stuff on the menu. And I guess that's because they might be getting better with ordering what they know is the most popular menu item, so that they don't just have all of this food spoilage being ready to make every single item that they have on this 50-page menu. So we try to do the same thing in our household as well. Like, I'll shop for maybe just the week, so I know that if I don't use this stuff, at least I got a little bit more time to use it on the next week versus just buying stuff this, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks at a time and then not using it and then it spoils. So making sure that we get a handle on how we store food, how we purchase food. They also mentioned that, like, when you go to a restaurant, if they still have those styrofoam containers when you get home, to put it in something that's airtight.
Yeah.
So that it can last a little bit longer, which a lot of restaurants nowadays do have, like,
better,
the airtight containers to where, you know, it can hold up a little bit better. So that's one thing. Another way to reduce food loss is donating to hunger relief organizations. So if it's something that's not yet expired and you just know that you're not going to use it, or a lot of people, when they're changing their diet, they just throw everything out that they don't want to eat anymore, that stuff can be donated to, you know, some type of shelter or some type of hunger relief organization so that people in need can have those things. And then also, inedible food can be recycled into other products such as animal feed, compost, and worm castings, bioenergy, bioplastics, and clothing. I've definitely seen an uptick in people using recycled goods or, like, you know, throwing out food and stuff like that for household goods or clothing and stuff like that. It's a few different
upcycling
little clothing lines that I've seen kind of going around lately, as far as, like, these pair of jeans were made with, you know, this many plastic bottles. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. A lot of the times this stuff is kind of expensive, though.
Yeah.
When I saw it, I was like, That's expensive, but I guess the method to actually, you know, make it into something that could be used for clothing is a lot more involved than just synthetic fabrics and things of that nature.
And you mentioned how you said you would go to the grocery store and you started, like, buying for the week. That's something I also had to do, because even though I don't cook all the time, I'm a, like, a bulk buyer. So when I see sales, I think, oh, let me get the biggest size.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you do that, you're not necessarily thinking about how much of the stuff you're going to actually use. So maybe when you're in the store, getting enough for what you're actually going to make instead of just getting extra and then having to throw away all the extra stuff that you're, you know, bringing home. That's my flaw.
My mom does that so much. So, like, every time I'm at her house, I just grab a bag and start taking fruit out of her fridge or taking stuff out of the fridge. So I'm like, you're not going to use this by the time it goes bad.
I think I get it from either my mom or my grandma. I think I just feel like I need to store it.
She shops at Sam's. That's the thing about places like Sam's.
I love my Sam's card.
And they give you those big old containers of everything. It's like, are you really going to eat that produce? You know, cereal and stuff like that's got a better shelf life. But, like, when it comes to produce, you know, try not to buy too much.
Yeah, so making sure that I just get for what I need instead of just getting excess.
So article 2, our next article is Food Waste in America in 2023. The facts about food waste. Like I said, the U.S. discards more food than any other country in the world, about 40% of the entire U.S. food supply. So nearly half of our food supply is being wasted every year.
Yep.
Food spoilage, whether real or perceived, is one of the biggest reasons people throw out food. And this is what I talked about as far as the labeling. People just look at stuff and there are very few foods that say expires, you know, on this day. Like I said, it'll usually say sale by or best by. There are very few that'll say use by. And I think, like, milk might be one of the main ones that's, like, use by this date. But even with milk, like, it's not, like, a hard date to sell it, you know, to throw it out by.
Right, because if you freeze it or if you haven't opened it up, sometimes you can still have a little bit of shelf life. It just depends on if you open it, how much you've been using it, if you've been letting it sit out, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So wasting food has irreversible environmental consequences because it wastes the water and energy that it took to produce and generate greenhouse gases in the environment. So 11% of the world's emissions, like methane, carbon dioxide, fluorocarbons, which contribute to global warming. So we're actually truly destroying the environment with the amount of food waste that occurs. Food that sits decaying in landfills also produces nitrogen pollution, which causes algae blooms and dead zone. According to the World Wildlife Federation, the production of wasted food in the U.S. is equivalent to the greenhouse emission of 37 million cars. So that was like a huge number, like a wow fact for me, because we always think of, you know, cars and planes and things of that as the biggest air pollutions, and we don't think of food waste as being so harmful to the air. So that kind of like really opened up my eyes to that and really kind of made me be like, wow, let me pay attention to the food waste that, you know, occurs in my household or the places that we frequent.
Right. And while we're on it with the landfills, I also saw that there is 325 pounds of waste per person. And if you were to look at that, that's like an American throwing away 975 average size apples right into a landfill. And like, I guess sometimes when you see, like, when you hear like that analogy or like you can picture that, then you can see how much food we're actually wasting in a year. So it's just something to be like mindful of.
Mm-hmm. Says the average American family of four throws out $1,600 a year in produce.
Yeah.
So that was also a big number because, like, when you think about, you know, just your bag of apples, your bag of oranges, like $1,600 worth of food, like, we could have been on vacation.
multiple vacations.
We could have been somewhere on the beach for $1,600, a little flight or something. So 43% of waste comes from home. 43% of waste comes from homes and residents. 40% comes from restaurants, grocery stores, food service companies. 16% is farm food waste, and about 2% is from manufacturers. Just to kind of give you a breakdown of where all of this waste is coming from, because we also have to think about how you know, food might get destroyed in transit. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing this one article where I think it was like tomato sauce or something. A truck that was carrying tomato sauce had an accident and it was just everywhere. Red paste everywhere, like spread out throughout the highway. And I was like, dang, how much money worth of tomato sauce is that on the highway? And how much water and materials is it going to take to clean off that highway to make it, you know, drivable again?
Not only that, that brings me back to when I worked at the grocery store. Same thing, like when they're unboxing stuff, mm-hmm. when they drop it or anything like that, then all that stuff goes to waste. So like if it is damaged in any way before we get it on the floor, most of the time, tons of produce, all that stuff has to get thrown out. If somebody, let's say you're in a store shopping and then you grab a gallon of milk, you get to the front, you say, oh, I got the wrong milk, I don't want to take it back. Mm-hmm. So you give it to the cashier person. When you give it to us, we can't put it back on the floor because we don't know how long you've had it in your basket. So we have to throw that out. Like, so just really being mindful when you pick stuff up in the grocery store or like any transaction that you make with food or produce whenever you're in a store, just making sure that like if you aren't gonna buy it, putting it back, especially if it's something that can spoil easily or that we might not be able to just put back on the floor.
Mm-hmm. That makes me think of how the last few times I've been grocery shopping, I've been seeing, like, you know how you'll put something back just wherever you mm-hmm. are, you know, go back to the section to put it back sometimes. People have put 2 or 3 packs of hot dogs where the cereal goes. Yeah. And I'm like, you didn't even try. Like, yeah. You could at least put it somewhere where the refrigerator is.
And when we find it, you have to throw it out. You have to throw it out because we can't tell how long it's been there. Yeah. Just for like the safety of consumers, you can't put it back on the floor.
Because if you put it back in the refrigerator and then somebody comes by it and they get sick off those hot dogs, now they're trying to sue Kroger. Now they're trying to, you know, sue Frank's for giving them these spoiled hot dogs, and you can't really track where it was spoiled. Yep. So, mm-hmm. yeah, things like that. Just little things to think about.
Also in this article, I saw that they said that several states across the country were taking action to curb the food waste and gain some food recovery. So, like, legislators in California, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, Rhode Island, and Vermont have passed laws to restrict the amount of food waste that goes into landfills. And I think that's really important. They also said in Vermont that they're doing a universal recycling law. And it went in effect in 2020, banning food scraps waste entirely. According to the Vermont Food Bank, as a result, the new law, food donations statewide have increased by 40%. So stuff like that, if we can get like legislation involved to like help mm-hmm. curb the food waste, it will be like super impactful to the environment and to the consumers.
Mm-hmm. So some other ways to confront waste and solving the problem at home, besides, you know, looking at the Best Buy dates and planning meals to be deliberate about what you're cooking for the week, is to learn how to compost to keep food scraps out of landfills and greenhouse gas from rising. And when I was little, I can definitely remember my grandmother composting a lot, especially because she grows her own vegetables. Mm-hmm. She has like tomatoes, spinach, things like that. So she would definitely compost, and she'd be like, oh, don't throw those eggshells away, or oh, don't throw this away, I can put that in the compost. And I'll just be like, okay. Another thing is freezing foods that can't be eaten immediately but can be consumed at a later date. Mm-hmm. I've had to start doing this with bread because I never finish a loaf of bread. So now when I come home, I would just put the loaf of bread in the freezer. And when I'm making a sandwich or making a burger or something, I'll just pull out those 2 slices. Either I'll leave it on the counter for like 5-10 minutes, or I'll just put it in the microwave for about 20 seconds and it'll be, you know, just like it needs to be, because I don't eat a lot of bread and it'll just go to waste. I'll probably eat like a third of the loaf of bread before it goes bad. So now I'm good about putting it in the freezer so that it doesn't go. So reducing the waste at America's restaurants. The restaurant industry spends about $162 billion every year in food waste cost. So make sure that you take home leftovers to eat later or to give to others. I know when I was in Atlanta, in certain neighborhoods where, you know, it might be a really big homeless population, even if we knew that we weren't going to finish our food, if we didn't like it or something like that, we would make sure to give it to the homeless. That makes me remember when I didn't even necessarily think about it. It just kind of happened. I was in a neighborhood called Little Five Points, and we were walking home, well, you know, walking back to the bus station, like my sophomore year of college, and I'm holding my little to-go tray, and this homeless man walks up behind me and was like, "Are you gonna finish that?" and just takes the tray out of my hand, and I was like, actually, I was, but you can have it. And so from then on, I just kind of would always be like, well, you know, that is a good way to help somebody when, you know, help a homeless person. Because we were in college, so it's not like we had the means to just give them money and things like that. But we could definitely give them leftover foods. And just taking home your leftovers in general, I don't know why it seems like... like, the more money you get or something like that, like, they just don't take home the food. Like, they find it tacky to take a to-go tray or something like that.
That's not me. I'm always saving my leftovers. I think it tastes better the next day. Right. I'm sorry. It sits a little bit better. The seasonings be hitting a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you don't like microwave food, you can put it in a skillet. You can put it in an oven. There's so many different ways.
Air fryers now. So. Like, I'll even take some fries home now because you can just pop them in the air fryer and...
I'm the same way. I don't necessarily understand it either. If you aren't, I try to do it with my friends. If you're not gonna take your food home, like you said, it's still nice to package it up. You can always give it to somebody that's in need. Mm-hmm. There's people all everywhere that might be struggling or might want something to eat. Offer it to them. If they don't want it, somebody else, you know, mm-hmm. family, friends, anybody, just so you're creating less waste.
And that's another thing. Like when I go to the grocery store, sometimes I'll experiment. I'm like, oh, what's this? This is new. Let me see how this is. And if I don't like it, I don't just throw it away. Sometimes I'll ask my mom, hey, do you want to try these? You know, mm-hmm. I didn't really like them, but I didn't want to throw them away. So I figured, you know.
Maybe.
Maybe you would like them. And some stuff, she's like, oh, yeah, I like those. Give me some more of those so mm-hmm. that I'm not just throwing food away. And one day she was like, do you think I'm your little garbage disposal? I was like, no, mother, I just don't want to waste food. Like, so much better to just hand it off to somebody else. So another thing is when you're going to buffets, if you go to buffets, not to load your plate with a whole lot of food that you may or may not eat. So mm-hmm. just start off small, and if you like it, then go get more. But just to just, you know, go through on the first time, just loading up your plate with food, because that's just food there. Waste mm-hmm. in general. They also talk about how France requires restaurants to donate the food that is at risk of being thrown out but still safe to eat. And like I said, that's, you know, some type of legislation that needs to be passed here in the U.S. because, you know, we just waste so much food. So reducing food waste in commercial businesses. They also talk about how commercial businesses add to the growing problem of food waste. Companies are now innovating new ways to use food waste as ingredients for other products, setting up food donation plans, or implementing commercial composting programs. One company that they talk about is called The Real Deal, which is a Denver-based pickle company that created a Bloody Mary mix out of the cucumber water used to make the pickles. So instead of just throwing out that water, they said, okay, you know, first thing I thought about was pickleback shots. So I was like, mm-hmm. I guess people would, you know, have some type of drink where they would have some type of sour uh-huh. pickle vinegar taste to it. So the mix is now more well-known than the pickles, and the company has an even smaller environmental footprint. They also mention a company called Watermelon Water that takes watermelons that will be normally thrown out and create a juice out of the melons. Mm-hmm. So that's also, you know, a way that companies do. There are also companies that turn the food waste and turning it into new products, like Ambrosia, who is turning organic waste into cleaning sprays. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all type of ways that companies have come up with to cut back on their environmental footprint, cut back on their emissions, cut back on the food waste.
So another article we read this week was about food expiration dates. We've kind of been talking about it a little bit as we've been going through everything so far, but expiration dates are not usually expiration dates. The dates have nothing to do with safety. It acts solely as a manufacturer's best guess of when the food will no longer be at its peak quality for the most part. Food manufacturers also tend to be rather conservative when they come to like putting on a date, dates as far as the food that they are putting the dates on, because consumers have a tendency to not store products properly. So the reason why they make the dates so, you know, consumer conservative is because most times we're not even putting the food in the proper places or storing it the way that it needs to be stored. So they just want to make sure that you are getting the best quality as far as the food that you're eating. So foods such as vinegars, honey, vanilla, other extracts, sugars, salts, corn syrup, molasses, they virtually last forever with little change in their quality. That's something that y'all should keep in mind. Regular steel cut or rolled oats, grits, they last for a year or so before they start to get, you know, a little bit part cooked. And then instant oats can nearly last forever as well. White flour lasts for years. And then whole grain flours last for a few months. Shelf-stable supermarket breads that are made with oils and preservatives can stay soft for weeks in the fridge, which you mentioned, like freezing it would be a good option. Shelf-stable supermarket breads made with oils and preservatives can stay fresh for weeks when you keep them in the refrigerator or in the freezer, like KB mentioned earlier. But the lean sourdough breads from like corner stores that or bakeries usually go stale by the next day. So if you are getting like fresh bread, it's important to either freeze it or get it only enough that you can eat at that time period. And then they have dry beans and lentils. They remain safe to eat for up to a year. Spices tend to last forever as well. It's just the decreases in its potency over time. And then canned foods, like with the metal canned goods, they last longer than the glass canned goods that when they're stored. And then they last even longer than the plastic ones. So if you are getting canned goods, it's important to make sure that you try to get the metal containers first. If you don't have metal container options, then glass, then plastic, if you want the food to last longer.
And for the canned and jar goods, they said to check for outward signs of spoilage or visible spoilage, such as cloudiness in the product, moldiness, or rotten smells. If the jar foods are bad, the button on the top will bulge. Yeah. And that's what I always tell you. Like, if that little pop can safety, you know, if that's already up, it's probably not good to buy if you hadn't already opened. Canned sodas will stay good for years. Just pay attention to the fizziness. So if you're pouring it in a glass and, you know, there's no fizziness, then clearly, you know. The next thing they mention is oils. So oils last longer if you don't keep them above your stove where heat can get to them. And seeing this had me like, oh, wow, that's definitely where, where I like keep right, my oils. Right by it. Right above the stove. And I never really
thought about it.
Not that I've moved them yet, but it was just something to think about because we go through our oils pretty quickly anyway. So it wasn't like, oh, well, you know, we keep. Like, we don't buy, like, the big, you know.
Yeah, you get, like, the smaller size.
Can of vegetable oil like we used to back in the day to fry foods and things like that. So, not anything necessarily we have to worry about. Old oil will start to develop metallic or soapy taste or a fishy smell. To test your oils, put a drop on your fingertip and squeeze it. Rancid oil will feel tacky instead of slick. Mm-hmm. So, if you put the oil on there and it's, like, kind of sticky versus just, you know, being movable. Slick. Just, you know, it's probably old and you should throw it out. As far as condiments, mustard lasts forever. And when I thought about that, I was like, yeah, I've never thrown out mustard. I've thrown out ketchup. And they thought even though ketchup will start to change colors, it is still edible. I know. Because once it turns brown, it's just like...
But that's really food coloring if you think about it. A lot of it is like preservatives and stuff like that. Cause have you seen they have like the clear tomato? Have you seen the clear ketchup? I'm gonna have to send you a picture of it.
They have clear ketchup.
They have clear ketchup without anything. It's probably got preservatives too. But I'm it's clear.
In there.
Yeah, it's clear.
I've been seeing where Heinz have been doing all those different mashups or different types of the condiments and stuff. I just steer away from it. It's kind of weird to me. And contrary to popular belief, mayo has an exceptionally long shelf life, especially when it doesn't have fresh lemon juice or garlic as an ingredient. Eggs. It takes a long time for eggs to go bad. They are perfectly edible for several weeks after the carton date. And that was something that I learned a few years ago simply because one of my coworkers had chickens and she would be like... she would, you know, offer us the eggs because she had like 5 or 6 chickens. And when it's warm out, they just like lay like eggs. 3 or 4 eggs a day. So she would have all these eggs. So she would tell us, you know, just bring in your egg carton and I'll fill it up with eggs and bring it back to you. And I was like, well, don't they need to be refrigerated? And she was like, no. Like, until you put them in the refrigerator, then they need to stay refrigerated. But if you have the eggs at room temperature and keep them at room temperature, they're still good for a few weeks. Like, they don't have to immediately go into the fridge. So at that point, you know, I started kind of looking at the eggs and testing the eggs. Like, okay, these eggs really are, you know, still good for this amount of time, to where I think the carton has it at like a 2-week span that you need to throw it out. But like I said, it's perfectly edible for several weeks after that carton. Milk. From the moment you open a carton of milk, bacteria starts to digest lactose and produce acidic byproducts. So that's what I mentioned. Milk is probably one of the
ones that you need
one of the few that you like pay attention to the date on the milk. And that's another reason why I don't drink cow's milk.
I say dairy in general, like yogurt sometimes too, stuff that actually you can see it molding and changing,
and you can smell it. You can smell it when it's going bad, for sure. Baby food, the only food with federally mandated use by dating. But the thing about baby food that kind of trips me out is that's some of the main foods that we find out is contaminated with metals or contaminated with different things. So the fact that it's, you know, a federally mandated use by date and they have, you know, different restrictions on baby food and how it can be manufactured, it still comes with its risk as well. But yes, baby food is the only one with the hard use by date.
So this next article is the FDA, and it just talks about food loss and waste. Effectively reducing food waste will require a cooperation amongst the federal, state, and tribal local governments, faith-based institutions, environmental organizations, and communities, and consumers as well. In 2018, the FIC...
Federal Interagency Collaboration.
Yes. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, and the EPA, which is also the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Food and Drug Administration signed a joint agency formal agreement, and it aimed at improving coordination and communication across the federal agencies, attempting to better educate. So the Federal Interagency Collaboration in 2018, it was with the USDA, which is the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, also known as the EPA, and the U.S. and Food Drug Administration, FDA, signed a joint agency formal agreement aimed at improving the coordination and communication across the federal agencies, attempting to better educate Americans on the impacts of the importance of reducing food loss and waste. The agreement was renewed in December 17th, 2020. The Federal Interagency Collaboration took place in 2018. It's with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, also known as the USDA, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, signed a joint agency formal agreement aimed at improving coordination and communication across federal agencies, attempting to better educate Americans on the impacts and importance of reducing food loss and waste. The agreement was renewed in 2020. The USDA, the EPA, and the FDA issued the Federal Interagency Strategy in 2018. This strategy identifies 6 priority areas in which the agency will focus their efforts to reduce food loss and food waste. The priority areas highlight the importance of the collaboration between the government agencies and the engagement leaders in the public. Private and nonprofit organizations will play in solving this problem. The first area that they think that needs to be worked on is to enhance the interagency coordination. So basically, everybody working together to solve this issue. Priority area number 2 is to increase the consumer education and outreach efforts. The priority 3 is to improve coordination and guidance on food loss and waste measurement. The priority area 4 is clarify and communicate information on food safety, food date labels, and food donations. Priority area 5 is to collaborate with private industries to reduce food loss and waste across the supply chain. And then priority area 6 is to encourage food waste reduction by the federal agencies in the respective facility.
So Article 5 is food waste in the U.S. Many unsustainable practices are responsible for food waste in the U.S. Like I mentioned, high aesthetic standards and uniform consumer behaviors are main causes. Food waste started to become a problem in the 19th and early 20th century during the rise of industrialization and manufactured food products. So this caused it to be, you know, caused food to be more accessible and affordable, therefore making it easier to waste. Another thing, COVID-19 has also had an effect on food waste. During March 2020, grocery stores spiked by 70% and sustained a 10% increase in the following months. And so when COVID was around, you know, people tried to limit their time in the grocery store so they would buy more food at one time mm-hmm. to prevent, you know,
going back
and being exposed to COVID-19. But with that increased buying, it was increased waste because they weren't using all of that food by, you know,
the expiration date
or before the produce started to spoil and things of that nature. So that also led to the increased waste. And average American consumers waste 10 times more food than those in Southeast Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa. So like I mentioned, like America by far wastes the most food.
Okay, so also in that article, they talked about the food waste has been heightened for Americans by the aesthetic standards. And they did like a study where they had 964 participants test the impact of food shape and the abnormality of buying intentions and revealed that higher proportions of participants are willing to buy normal-looking products as opposed to abnormal-looking products. So that study also found out that 20% of produce is cosmetically compromised to meet the commercial standards. And this type of vetting system leaves both the suppliers and distributors to having to get rid of thousands of pounds of unwanted yet edible food. I know that they mentioned that they do that with potatoes.
I was just about to say, I am guilty of it with potatoes. Mm-hmm. If the potato looks a little weird to me, I'm like, let me just go to a whole nother store to get some potatoes.
The big one is potatoes. They said it about green peppers as well and tomatoes. Because those are like the ones where if you see it, you look at it and you're like, okay, I'm not gonna get that one. Bananas too.
Bananas, yeah, that's another one. Mm-hmm. If it's not real pretty, I'll mm-hmm, mm-hmm. we'll get bananas next time. So the next article, new data shows U.S. food waste is getting worse. The U.S. produced 91 million tons of surplus food in 2021, a 5% increase over the 2016 dates. So we are not making much progress that the government set out for the 2030 goal, and we're actually going in the opposite direction because the food waste is increasing. So the updated data shows retail waste is about half of the previous estimates. Mm-hmm. So retail waste is also, you know, every type of waste is going up. They proposed that 42 food waste solutions with the public information campaign at the top of the list. And I think that would be a good program to have, you know, commercials that go out about, you know, non-aesthetically pleasing foods or truly describing the use by, sell by, best by dates and things like that, because it's all a common misconception at this point. So if we spread that information on how to properly view these and understand these, I think it would make a huge difference in, you know, the community.
Yeah, or even when we're watching programming, not having the perfect tomato, like having them use something that's not necessarily super aesthetically pleasing. So people just get trained that, okay, it's okay for a tomato not to be bright red, or it's okay if it has a bruise on it. So just like, I guess reprogramming the way we look at certain things would be important. And then also, in this article, it just made me think of a question, and it was just like, as Americans, do you feel like we value food? And to me, I don't think we do value food, or we don't necessarily understand like if we continue the way we're going, the effects that we're going to, that the later generation or like our, us in our later life are going to see because of the decisions we're making now as far as the food waste.
Yeah, I don't think that, I think we value food and that we know we need it, but we don't truly understand it. I think it's truly like a big misinformation, misunderstanding type thing. So I think that's why it would be very important that, you know, these information campaigns really be a thing. Such a campaign would need to be government funded, and they said it should run for at least a decade for people, you know, to truly understand it and for it to truly make a difference. So that was, you know, something I really, you know, thought about and would like to see happen worldwide and especially nationwide, since we're the ones that's having the majority of the waste.
The last article that we're going to mention is Beyond the Menu, Food Waste in America Restaurant Industries. And with this article, this is just mostly what restaurants can do to make a difference. Reducing food waste in hospitality and food service sector just alone could save us $7 billion annually by offering, the way they could do this in the way that the article explained it was by offering smaller portions. Restaurants can reduce the amount of food that is wasted when consumers are unable to finish their meals. Similarly, restaurants can offer half portions or allow customers to do side dishes rather than full meals to reduce the amount of food that is wasted. I think that's a great option because sometimes I might just want something small, but you can't order something small, so you have to get like a whole thing. Or sometimes I don't really want three sides, but since it comes with three sides, and I get three sides. So offering smaller portions would definitely help with, you know, I think it would help with cutting back on some of the food waste in restaurants. Did you see anything else in there that you...
Nope, nothing new. Just the same thing that we've been talking about from the other articles as far as asking for the to-go boxes, storing your leftovers properly. Also, they mentioned using leftovers to make other meals. Oh. So, like, if you go to a restaurant and you have, like, roast with some sides and you eat up all the sides but you still have a little bit of roast left, make a sandwich or a salad with that instead of throwing it away since there is no more sides to go with it.
Yeah.
So that was something, you know.
I kind of do that. When I get ramen, I go home and I take, like, the extra broth and I make my own. It's so good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just making sure that we start to implement some of these practices to cut down on food waste and making sure that we shop for, you know, just a week or two at a time and not trying to shop for the month and some of those things get spoiled and just making sure that we take more of a responsibility with our food and how that we consume it.
And just learning. A lot of it's just like learning the information. So learning that the expiration dates aren't necessarily expiration dates. Or knowing that when you see a fruit and it's bruised that you can still eat it. It's not, it doesn't mean it needs to be disposed.
So that's it for this episode of Food Waste in the U.S. Hope you guys learned something about that and that you implement some of these practices that we mentioned.
So this is a wrap for this episode. I hope y'all enjoyed it. You can follow us on Instagram, which is Hood Health Report, as well as Facebook and Twitter, Hood Health Pod.
We also have a TikTok page now, Hood Health Report. Follow us there.
Yeah.
Don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel. All of the links will be in the descriptions and the bios for you to click on.
Tap, like, comment, do it all.
Subscribe, all of the things. Share it with a friend.
Yes.
Share it on your social media.
If you have a TikTok, make a little video, send it.
Let us know you're out there watching, guys. All right, that's it for this episode. Bye.